This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Or talk about Andy Lennox's voice if you want to.
Yeah. So
we'll be happy to hear from you. Now, we have in the studio our next guest with us, David. We've got Leighton Triplow, who is a tenor opera singer.
High tenor. We must find out what high tenor means.
I will ask a question. So we're here to talk about, we're just here to talk opera, basically, a little bit, and you've got a performance coming up as well, Leighton. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here on this muggy but beautiful day.
Yeah.
It has got a bit muggy. It didn't start off with muggy.
It was just warm.
This morning I had my big black coat on, and now I'm just sort of in...
Well, you know what Melbourne's like, don't you?
Well, that's so
exactly,
right.
You should be prepared for that one. Now, Leighton, before we talk about the show in particular, want to get a little bit, get a bit of background on you, Leighton. So now what we would like to do is just get a bit of an understanding where you got to where you are now. So I'm sure it's not a very long journey. Looking at you, your youthful look, being that you haven't had too much of a journey. But
wrong side of 25 these days, but there you go.
But, what's the right side of 25, David? You're talking to David and I here, you know. So, but Leighton, how did you get started in opera? Or is that something you've always wanted to do, sing?
Well, I was always involved in music from a very young age. In fact, in the earliest years, my parents were involving me in music in many different ways. And when I was at primary school, I actually played the clarinet and the violin. That was my first exposure, if you like, to music. And it was only around the time that I was maybe 10 or 11 that I started singing in children's choirs. I was in the Australian Children's Choir with Andrew Wales for about eight years.
Yep. Yeah.
And that was just an amazing thing to have done at that early age, not just for the musicianship skills that you learn, but also the wonderful exposure to the world of classical music in Australia.
Yeah.
So you
didn't have a problem with your voice breaking, or?
Well, look, my voice broke when I was 14. So most of my years in the children's choir were as a boy soprano.
Right.
And as I like to say to people, I think my voice only half broke, hence why I'm a high tenor.
And that leads us to our next question.
Yes.
What's the difference between a high tenor, well, besides high, I suppose, high tenor and tenor?
So a high tenor is, particularly for early music repertories, the Baroque music, tends to be written maybe a tone or two higher than what you would find in Romantic and 20th century and so on, the music from those times. So because it sits quite high in the voice, I've always found myself gravitating towards the music of Handel and other English Baroque composers.
And beautiful music as well.
Absolutely.
How hard was it to train your voice to be, or was it just, and is that the natural thing when you become a high tenor?
Look, when my voice broke, it took a few years to really get used to singing in a different register and essentially learning the vocal technique to perform that sort of music. But I think with a good vocal technique, you can sing any sorts of repertoire.
Oh, okay.
But I think it's also combined with my love for that music from that period.
Yep. And why? What is it about it? You know, like you said it suits your voice range.
Yep.
Was that the main reason, or was there other reasons that pushed you in that direction?
I think it has something to do with the mathematical basis of these earlier works. There's a very clear structure to them. I've always enjoyed the structure within these works and the way that composers, within that framework, the creativity within that framework. So for Handel, for example, the wide range of operatic arias that you get within that sound world of Baroque music, and just his skill for writing for the voice as well.
Mm.
So it was a very natural fit to go down that path.
Now let's talk about that era, Baroque music.
Yeah.
England.
Yes.
Why was it coming out of England so much? And because people were moving there, weren't they?
Yes.
Actually.
Well, in the period of music that I've researched, the late 17th century, there was a real vogue for all things Italian. And so you had a lot of Italian musicians actually migrating to England and influencing the music culture around that time. The late 17th century, you really still see the kind of traditional English idiom, but as we move into the 18th century, where you find composers like Handel, this vogue for the Italian really took off. And so you have this interesting blend in England of Italian influence, but also the French influence, of course, with the court in England and Charles II, there's that clear French influence.
Yeah, and art had a big part to play as well, didn't it?
It did indeed.
As visual arts, I mean.
Yes.
And, you know, with all the painted ceilings in a lot of the buildings in England at that time.
Yeah, you're right, but I always think that music took a few decades to catch up. It's the same with other periods of music. You seem to have these inventions, if you like, in the art world that come a few decades before the music world.
Oh, okay, yeah. Really? Oh.
So with the Renaissance repertoire, you find that's sort of a little bit after the Renaissance art that we recognise today.
Okay, yeah. Right. So here you are, you're obviously getting to the end of your high school. What was the leap from high school into uni?
When I was in year 11, I auditioned for the Victorian College of the Arts Secondary School, or VCAS for short.
Okay.
And at that time, I was still majoring in clarinet, but certainly had voice as a second study there. And that was really a pathway into the Bachelor of Music at Melbourne University, just being in an environment where we spent, 10 hours a day focusing on our music craft and around so many like-minded individuals that really loved performing and all aspects of the music craft. Mm. And that really led into university and so on.
All right, so we'll come back and find out more about
that. To be continued.
Yeah, exactly. You're here on Joy 94.9.
800 50 50 49. Joy sponsor.
Now, we're talking to Leighton Tripler here on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts, and we were just getting to your VCE period.
Yes.
VCA, sorry, period.
Oh, yeah.
Joy
yeah.
College of Arts, you got to.
That's right.
So, yep. We were just telling
or
us about
the HSC back in the day.
Yes, that's right. Then you start off a clarinet.
So I graduated from high school at the end of 2010 and was fortunate to gain a position at Melbourne University in the Bachelor of Music program. And that's where I've been for the past 10 years, sort of never taken a gap year, just gone from one degree to the next.
So when did you decide to go the voice instead of instrument?
It was actually quite early on in my university years that I started off on the clarinet, but I sort of realised early on that I wasn't cut out to be an orchestral player. I found the stress of that a little bit too much.
What do you mean stress?
Well, just the sort of perfectionism that goes with the orchestral world, not to make a single mistake, and that sort of freaked me out a bit.
Well, can you make mistakes with vocal, or shouldn't it be perfect as well?
Look, I think that it's a bit easier to get away with little quacks in the voice, if you like. I think there's a bit more artistic license. I could be wrong. You'd have to speak to an orchestral player. But for me personally, I just found that it was a more natural fit going into vocal performance.
Right.
So it was early on in my first year that I took the plunge and went into voice as my primary study. And during my bachelor degree, I was fortunate to go on an exchange program to the United Kingdom, 6 months of studies in the UK, which is where I met several academics that then put me on the path which I've been following for the past 5 years, which was a PhD into the composer Henry Purcell.
Right. And tell us, who is he?
So Henry Purcell was a composer of the late 17th century, again tying in with that interest that I'd had previously.
And he was an Englishman.
He was an Englishman through and through. And he wrote a huge amount of repertoire. Surprisingly, some of the domestic secular songs that he wrote, so that's music around, the keyboard instrument of the day in the leisure leisurely spaces of the home.
And what was that keyboard? Was it a harpsichord?
Usually the harpsichord, yep. But could also be a little chamber organ or plucked instruments,
right.
Kind of the forerunners to the guitar. So quite a bit of flexibility in the way.
Oh, so the guitar hadn't been invented.
It was in Spain at the time,
right.
And in continental Europe, but in terms of the earlier instruments, again, England was sort of a bit slower to pick up on these developments.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
I thought guitar would have been around before the keyboard.
Sort of an earlier version of, but...
Right.
Yeah. More Learned flexibility something. In the way that these works were performed,
yeah.
Definitely to the allure that the piano has these days, I guess you'd say.
Mm.
Anyway, I... ended up researching a selection of the repertoire that hasn't been looked at in depth before by the community of scholars on Purcell scholarship. And my contribution there was tying together a scholarly interest in the literature, the life and times of this composer, with my own creative practice as a performer of this music.
Okay. And now tell us, how well known was he in England, or still is?
Look, he was quite well known at the time. He wrote a lot of music for the Restoration Theatre, and he also put a lot of his music into what are known as song anthologies of the day, so the music that was in the household, but also lots of ties with the royal court of the time and writing odes for the royalty and whatnot. So he was known, but perhaps not... maybe not a household name like the allure that Handel had going a few decades later.
Yeah.
Where that idea of the composer comes into being.
Yep. Okay. And so you worked on your PhD.
Yes.
And did you enjoy it? Was it a fascinating journey?
I think any PhD project has its ups
and
downs.
Well, it's a huge project,
bit of a roller coaster ride. At the end of the day, I think it's been a worthwhile experience doing that. I've been able to take my vocal craft to a new level, and also my skill in writing, reading and presenting at seminars and whatnot. Those have all gone up a level over the 3 or 4 years that I was putting this project together. I sort of see the PhD as a training for further research down the track.
More research.
Possibly,
wow.
Yeah.
So, can you see yourself, say, in, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years time, still, maybe doing research and working on university degrees in other shapes and forms, or are you going to go into teaching?
What I'd like to do ultimately is to combine an interest in writing and reading scholarly research with my performance practice. My supervisors when I was at university were very successful in balancing life as a freelance performer and life as an academic, and I'd like to follow in their footsteps. But I think usually the research informs the performance practice. So it's really contextualized the music that I'm researching these days.
Yeah.
I always have that scholarly background to what I'm performing.
Yep. So it's not taking it into a new course so much.
I think it's more building upon the skills that you've learned over the past few years and then applying it to, that interest, as I said before, in early music repertories, but maybe having a bit more flexibility to focus on other areas as well.
And when did you finish your PhD?
I graduated in December last year, so it's still quite a...
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's quite a surreal feeling not being a student after all these years of high school and university.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're doing a performance. Now, we're going to actually get you onto our show on a bit of a regular basis to come in and talk about... like other performers and topics that you might think our audience will be interested in.
Fabulous.
Over time, so about once a month, once every 6 weeks, we're going to get you back in and pick a topic to talk about that wonderful time in music that so many of us don't know very much about at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are so many genres of music from the past that are ripe for exploration.
Mm.
So I'm very much looking forward to that, David.
Excellent. Now, tell us about this performance you've got coming up on the 6th of March.
So this performance coming up is sort of the tail end of my PhD, if you like. I was actually supposed to put this concert on at the end of December, but about 5 days before the performance, my appendix was not entirely happy.
Oh, no.
And a trip to the hospital later, and I was out of action for about 2 weeks.
Gosh.
And as other musicians would know, December is an extremely busy time. So that was bad timing, to say the least. But back on track now, and really excited to be putting this program together. What it is I'm singing a number of songs, the composer I mentioned before, Henry Purcell.
Mm-hmm.
My lutenist Rosemary Hodgson and I were performing about five of Purcell's domestic songs that haven't really been heard that often. So it's kind of an insight into that period of music. That will be surrounded by some earlier music by the Elizabethan composer John Dowland, who wrote some really beautiful songs for lute and voice. And in the middle, we've got some Italian Renaissance music. But the really interesting thing about this program is a new work that's been composed by British composer Mark Dyer, who was a really lovely chap that I studied with in Manchester on a recent exchange program to the Royal Northern College of Music. And we toyed with the idea of putting together a modern work with the lute and voice, the lute again being this early instrument, and seeing what kind of sound world that we could create with a modern soundscape but using these early instruments. So Rosemary and I have been spending quite a number of hours decoding, if you like, this manuscript and trying to put together this really ethereal quality that Mark has put to paper.
Mm.
And just seeing it come alive. I mean, the first rehearsals, it wasn't really working because there is so much detail that he's put into this music that it's taken hours upon hours to get it to the point that we are today. So really looking forward to that.
Right. And where's it on?
So the details are Friday the 6th of March. Mm-hmm. That's this coming Friday.
Yep.
12 p.m.
At lunchtime. Yep.
And that will be at the Trinity College Chapel at the University of Melbourne. Mm-hmm. So Trinity College is on Royal Parade, and there's a beautiful chapel just inside the gate there. It's free admission, of course. So if you're free at 12 noon on Friday, do come along. We'd love to see you there.
Well, congratulations on the stellar hard work in the last 10 years, and can't wait to hear what you're going to come up with over the next coming months.
Well, thank you, David. It's obviously a huge support network that's allowed me to get to this point. Mm. So I'm very thankful for that and looking forward to the next chapter.
Yep. Good on you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.